Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Anyway, welcome again, everyone. So tonight, what I'd like to talk about are ghosts, hungry ghosts to be exact, and they don't just come out on Halloween. They lurk with us all the time. So first, what I'd like to do is just spend a little bit of time talking about the hungry ghosts in general, and then how it relates to us. Long before Buddhism evolved in India, Hindu or Brahmin beliefs and traditions were the dominant religions of the area. One important concept was transmigration, more commonly known in the West as reincarnation. It holds that all living beings die and are reborn again into the next life based on your behavior in your past life. When Buddhism emerged in India around 500 BC, the belief in transmigration became less important. However, it still plays a role in Buddhist philosophy to this day. According to ancient Buddhist cosmology, all living beings are born into one of six states of existence. This constant birth and rebirth is known as in Sanskrit as samsara. All are trapped in this wheel of life, as the Tibetans call it. All beings within the six realms are doomed to death and rebirth in a recurring cycle over countless ages, unless they can break free from the desire and attachments and attain enlightenment. Further, upon death, all beings are reborn into a lower or higher realm, depending on their actions while still alive. So if you screw up in this life, you may come back as a rodent or insect in the next one. And that was a pretty scary thought back then. In the lower two realms are the hungry ghost realm and the beings in hell. So what are the six realms, starting with the most desirable? First is the Deva, the realm of heavenly beings filled with pleasure. The Devas hold godlike powers. They live for countless ages. The next, humans, beings who both are good and bad, enlightenment still within their grasp. Asura, the realm of anger, jealousy. They are powerful, fierce, and quarrelsome. Like humans, they are partly good and partly evil. The next realm is the animals, the realm of animals and livestock, characterized by ignorance and servitude. Then the hungry ghosts, the realm of hungry spirits characterized by great craving and eternal starvation. And then the last, beings in hell, the lowest and worst realm characterized by torture and aggression. Today, these six realms are usually represented in some way at Zen centers, either in pictures or statues. For example, Jizo Bodhisattva is one of the most revered bodhisattvas in Mahayana Buddhism. He is a beloved and significant figure in Japanese culture, and he is the guardian of women and children. And his vow, not until the hells are emptied will I become a Buddha, not until all beings are saved. According to Buddhist lore, Jizo carries a gem that illuminates the darkest corners of hell in search of those to save. He also carries a staff with six rings. The staff is to pry open the doors of hell, and the six rings on the staff represent all the realms that he travels. So if you look up at the altar, facing the altar on the right-hand side, you'll see the wooden Jizo. And he has the staff, and three rings on each side of the staff, representing in total the six realms that Jizo travels. In Zen literature, hungry ghosts are often described quite visually. They are said to have necks as thin as needles, so very little food can pass through. And they have great distended bellies, so they're starving. They look pretty spooky, similar to E.T. during the 1982 movie by Steven Spielberg. In addition, they are described as beings in continual torment, because they have this great hunger that cannot be satisfied. Unlike ghosts and demons described in other religious traditions, the hungry ghosts found in Buddhism are generally not seen as frightening spirits. Rather, Buddhists feel pity for these beings and try to help them by offering them food, because, well, they're hungry. During our meals for a full day zazenkai or sashin, we each make an offering to the hungry ghosts when we chant the mealtime sutras. All of us raise our bowls of food with both hands as a symbolic offering to the hungry ghosts, with the chant leader stating, "Oh, all you hungry ghosts, we now offer you this food. May all of you everywhere share it with us together." In addition, there's a point before washing our bowls with tea when we raise our bowls again and the chant leader recites, "We wash our bowls in this tea. It has the flavor of ambrosial dew. We offer it to all hungry ghosts. May all be filled and satisfied." So we make this offering to all hungry ghosts within us and throughout the world. In Japan, hungry ghosts are known as gokai. Japanese Buddhists observe a special day to remember the gokai or hungry ghosts by making special offerings called sagaki, or feeding the hungry ghosts. Through this practice, it is believed that the hungry ghosts may be released from their torment. This ritual is traditionally performed to stop the suffering of the hungry ghosts or to keep the spirits of the dead from falling into the realms of the hungry ghosts. And the ceremony also gives participants an opportunity to remember those that have passed away. The ceremony may be performed at any time, but traditionally part of Obon, a festival held every year in July or August to remember the dead. Due to Western influence, however, the ceremony today is often held around Halloween because of the ghost theme. So what does all this ghost business have to do with us in everyday life? When I came to Zen practice years ago, I would hear reference to these hungry ghosts, which seemed to me like nothing more than Buddhist superstition. So I didn't pay much attention to the topic. But over the years, I've come to understand these hungry ghosts quite differently. The hungry ghost, or the state of being that it represents, is something found inside all of us, whether we realize it or not. The type of hungry ghost may be different for each of us, but the energy behind the hunger is the same. There's something we crave, something we feel that we need to be happy. We're all wanting something. It's just a fundamental aspect of being human. For some people, it could be the need for money or possessions. There are people who have plenty of money and yet still are obsessed with not having enough. For others, it could be a relentless craving for fame, recognition, or power. Just look at politics today. And for some, it could be even the craving for enlightenment. Sometimes a craving is strong enough that it can go beyond the tipping point and become an addiction. These hungry ghosts roam inside all of us, sometimes more dormant, sometimes more active. The hungry ghost is not always about acute craving. It can also manifest as a generalized dissatisfaction or restlessness that whatever we have is not enough. We wish we were someone else, somewhere else, doing something else, or our constant desire for more, better, and different, as our teacher used to say. For the Buddha, the recognition of the suffering that comes from our desires, our dissatisfaction, was the foundation for his teachings. In other words, life has its challenges. Life is not going to be perfect. In the Second Noble Truth, he tells us that this dissatisfaction has a cause, which is our cravings, the hungry ghosts, and attachment. He goes on to tell us that there is an end to this dissatisfaction by following the Noble Eightfold Path. The important thing from a Zen perspective is seeing the dynamic of the hungry ghost within us. Sitting in silence during Zazen is when our hungry ghosts often show up, and we get to see them firsthand, and especially during long sittings, like a sesshin. And when we do, the hungry ghosts lose some of their power, some of their energy. We can be practicing for a while before we really start to see this in everyday life, because we're easily become lost in the compelling allure of what it is we seem to want. We see the object of our desires and we fixate on that, without examining what are the energies driving the desire in the first place. Zazen helps us to see the mind in action. An image that comes to mind for me regarding the hungry ghosts is one that I can still picture quite vividly. About 8 years ago, my wife's boss had to back out of a week's paid stay at a resort hotel in Lake Tahoe, Nevada, because of another work obligation that came up at the last minute. So he gave the week's stay to my wife and I. Quite generous, you know. The hotel had a casino. I had never stepped foot into a casino, but I felt the desperate energy of the hungry ghost after a few days of walking past the gambling hall. The flashing lights, slot machines, the fixed stares on the faces of the guests gambling, people going from one slot machine to the other, thinking that something would be different. The casino bar filled at 10 a.m. in the morning with many people that have gambled throughout the night. It seemed as though everyone was in a trance-like state. If this wasn't the realm of the hungry ghost, I don't know what was. These people were chasing the jackpot of money, and I guess when we have the big win on our mind, there isn't much capacity for reflection on our intentions. Our drive to chase after things is very powerful. Most of the time, we chase things without looking at what is driving us to chase, or whether the object of the chase is what really will satisfy us. This is why Zazen is so important. It gives us the opportunity to settle down and stop the chase, stop the search, or at least see our grasping minds at work. It's interesting to see the ways the wanting mind can manifest even when we are sitting in the Zendo. It can become quite vivid. For example, we can be on a Saturday morning Zazenkai dreaming about the next Zazenkai when things will be a little better. We can be sitting Zazen and really want Kinhin to come. And once Kinhin comes, we wish we were sitting again. And now with Zoom, we could be online at home wishing we could be online wishing that we were at home. Or being here wishing we were online. And you might be wishing now that Emyo didn't pick this topic. We get to see all of this, hopefully with a bit of humor and self-compassion, and gain some wisdom about the craving mind. The Zen teacher, Charlotte Joko Beck, had an insightful perspective on the hungry ghost and how it drives us to search for more. This is what she said. What we search for may be different from person to person, but what we're really looking for is an ideal life. Something seems to be missing, and we're looking for that missing part. If we stop searching, what are we left with? Underneath all the searching, there is distress. There is unease. So instead of continuing to search, we start to see that Zen practice is to be with that which motivates the search, which is this unease and this distress. This is the turning moment. This, to be with that which motivates the search, as she puts it, is not always easy to do, especially if we spent a lot of time avoiding the unease. Whenever we are running away from part of our experience, we're not present for what is actually here. We're partially disconnected from our experience. That is the essence of a ghost. That our bodies are here, but we're not mentally connected with what is happening. Once we get to the point of what Joko Beck called the turning moment, when we start looking inside ourselves instead of chasing around outside, there can be a kind of relief. Because now we look at what is present, calling it by its name. The Buddhist teacher, Jack Kornfield, in his book, A Path with Heart, points out that whether our inner experiences are different or pleasant, the naming of them is the first step in bringing them to a wakeful, conscious attention. The key is to observe wanting and grasping without condemning it and without being caught up in it. We are developing a wise relationship with the wanting mind. So in other words, not condemning or rejecting what we see. When we first start to see our hungry ghosts, we typically want to get rid of them. But trying to get rid of our desires, our craving at that time, is just setting up a battleground. And getting rid of things is not necessarily our practice in Zen. Our practice is seeing and awareness, the acceptance of what is here as it is. Only then, through seeing clearly and a certain degree of self-compassion, can we proceed using wisdom to make a change. So I'd like to read another part of from his book. This is from the chapter called Naming the Demons. In ancient cultures, shamans learned that to name that which you feared was a practical way to begin to have power over it. We have words and rituals for many of our great outer events, birth and death, war and peace, marriage, adventure, illness, but often we are ignorant of the names of the inner forces that move so powerfully through our hearts and lives. In beginning to name the demons, we can especially look for the difficult sides of desire, the grasping and wanting mind. When the wanting mind first arises, we may not recognize it as a demon because we are often lost in its allure. Wanting is characterized as a hungry ghost. A ghost with an enormous belly and tiny pinhole mouth who can never eat enough to satisfy its endless need. When this demon or difficulty arises, simply name it as wanting or grasping and begin to study its power in your life. When we look at wanting, we experience the part of ourselves that is never content, that always says, if I only had something more, that would make me happy. Some other relationship, some other job, some more comfortable cushion, less noise, cooler temperature, warmer temperature, more money, a little more sleep last night. Then I would be fulfilled. In meditation, the voice of wanting calls us and says, if I only had something to eat now, I'd eat. Then I'd be satisfied. And then I could get enlightened. For the voice of wanting what is here now is never enough. You've no doubt seen mandalas, those intrinsic paintings or images on the nature of existence, typically the wheel of life. The realm of the hungry ghost is presented as one of the six realms. What's important to note in these images is that in the hungry ghost realm, as in all of the other realms, there is usually some type of Buddha or Dharma image. This serves as a visual reminder that even when we're caught up in the wanting and craving, these conditions are also the ground for our awakening, for us to wake up. Every situation can be workable, can be the ground of practice. It is how we transform dissatisfaction into wisdom. The wanting mind can be a powerful ground for us to take a step backwards, to look deeply at what is happening. In the radical simplicity of sitting and observing the mind, things come into focus a little more sharply. We start to settle down, to ground ourselves, to let the seeking mind come to rest. We develop the ability, a little at a time, to just be. Be ourselves. Be with our experience. Zazen gradually reveals our true nature, our Buddha nature, where nothing is missing or lacking. We feel less isolated and experience a deeper connection with ourselves and with others. In summary, there is nothing more healing for the hungry ghosts than the feeling of gratitude. Instead of feeling lacking and that what we have is not enough, we come to appreciate what we do have, and this is transformative. Our life may be filled with many difficulties and challenges, but we can still experience deep feelings of gratitude. Those of you who have come to Rohatsu Sesshin know that at the end of a few days of being together, it is not uncommon for people to share their feelings of gratitude for the experience that we have shared, eating, chanting the sutras, and sitting together in silence, even with the achy knees and achy hips. Gratitude and community are the fruits of Zen practice and are the fundamental things that help nourish and calm the hungry ghosts within us. This is the truth and not a lie.